Across the UK, across continental North America, and around the world on the internet, by webcast and by podcast, my name is Howard Hughes, and this is The Unexplained. Thank you for sticking by the show. Thank you for your great email feedback. I will trawl through a lot of your emails in a future edition. I had some really nice ones. Thank you so much for the understanding and the support. A couple of emails, too, from people who are suffering, as I'm suffering with tinnitus. I'll talk with you about that on a future edition. But certainly my journey to getting this problem at least understood has been a bit of an adventure here. So I'll talk to you about that again in the future. Thank you for your emails. And if you're suffering with this too, you have my total understanding. This time round, we're going to talk at a crucial point in this turbulent year of 2012 with Paul Gersio from the Future Predicting Merlin Project. Remember, Paul Gersio and George Hart have devised this scientific system that allows you to predict what will happen in the future for an organization or a person or a government, whatever, based on the events of the past. Life, time, and trends run in cycles. Now, maybe in your own life you've seen that. I've always found this fascinating, so we're going to cross to Paul Gersio and talk with him in just a moment. Thank you to Adam Cornwell at Creative Hotspot in Liverpool for creating our website. Please visit our website however you're hearing this show. It's vital, vital, vital that you do. www.theunexplained.tv, www.theunexplained.tv. You can leave me feedback there, suggest future guests, or just send me an email and we can shoot the breeze. I love getting your emails, and thank you very, very much for them. This show growing enormously now in North America, especially the last show about the Baltic UFO, which has had literally tens and tens and tens of thousands of listens so far. That's amazing, and it's only been out there for a matter of days, so thank you very much for your support. Thank you to Martin for the theme tune, and above all else, thank you to you for sticking with me, for keeping the faith with my show. Paul Gersio is waiting in the United States from the Merlin Project. Paul, nice to have you on again.
Yes, Howard, it's been about a year, and let's see, about a year, almost a year and a half.
The answer to that question from my side is it's always too long.
Well, you know, it's interesting. I've gotten some very interesting feedback from the podcast we did in February of 2011. And what we did that time was spend a fair amount of the program talking about the technology, how the technology works. In other words, what's involved in it and so on. And one of the differences between that show and this one that I want to make sure we do is talking about some of the things you can predict with this and some of the things that people use it for. Because it's one thing to get an understanding of the technology. If somebody wants to go back and listen to that podcast, it's your number 52. They're going to get a very good insight into the inner workings of some of this. I'll spend a few minutes talking about that today.
Just as a bit of a primer, Paul, I think we have to explain, because the thing that I've got now is that I have new listeners literally joining all the time, and you wouldn't believe how this show is growing, and I'm very grateful to those people. But just for new people who haven't heard you and I on radio or you and I on previous editions of The Unexplained here online, just give me, if you can, a two-minute synopsis, snapshot of how this thing works.
Well, Merlin is essentially an extraction of my studies over almost 40 years now of various what we like to call mystical systems. They developed in almost every civilization, from the Mayans to the American Indian, Native American, excuse me, for purposes of proper political correctness. And each one of those societies came up with its own particular way to essentially describe what really has to do with time issues. One of the things that the ancients noticed is that things would come in certain increments of time, and not for the most part the increments that we pay attention to. I mean, we're largely base 10 stuck. And so we pay attention to, you know, 10th and 25th anniversaries and 50th anniversaries and all of those things. What seems to be more true is that events and circumstances come along in increments that we don't pay attention to. Like, for instance, and you can jot these down, about 9 months after something happens, there's a change. And then about 7 1/4 years later, there is.
The seven-year thing we've talked about before, because I find that interesting. In my life, just personally, and many, many other people that I know, 7 years is a very significant time. Seven years between incidents. I find things repeat in my life after 7 years, provably.
That's right. And not only that, not only do they repeat, but there's often some kind of replay of some of the earlier circumstances. So, for instance, you know, the cast of characters that was involved in your life 7 1/4 years ago often reoccur. Even the same people, if not the same people, the same set of circumstances, almost as though you go through a kind of instant replay of some of the circumstances that were going on in your life 7 1/4 years ago.
And I find, Paul, I don't know if you do in your life, but it's fascinated me now that I've got to this stage in my life, that even if you don't find the same people recurring in your life, you do find the same situations, and you find, well, I find, similar types of people. This sounds wacko, but it's true. Similar types of people and circumstances occur at those intervals. It's almost like your life is a drama.
Well, yes, and it's interesting you point that out, because what you have at the later circumstance is new people playing the old roles.
Yes.
Okay, it's like a new cast of characters, but a very similar scenario. And, we can say, well, what time clock, what rhythm, you know, could possibly produce that? Well, there are time clocks in our corner of the universe over here in this solar system that operate to that rhythm and extrapolations of that rhythm. So not only 7 1/4, but about 21 or 22 years later, and then about 42 to 44 years later, and then about 84 years later.
But if you think about the intricacy of this, just in the lifespan of one person, it's not only you that those cycles have to operate. The cycles of other people around you and other organizations all have to mesh together. You're talking about an incredible equation, but an equation that you can show in your life works out.
Absolutely. And the interesting thing about it is, if you take a step back and actually look at it from a mathematical standpoint, you find that this is so organized as to suggest that what we call coincidence is just a term for a law we haven't quite figured out yet. I'll give you an interesting example of it that happened years ago that Dr. Hart and I still chuckle over. In 1991, both the now Sir Anthony Hopkins and Jodie Foster were up for the Academy Awards when, on that evening, the movie The Silence of the Lambs was up for something like 7 or 8 Academy Awards. I believe it won maybe as many as half a dozen. But early in the evening, Hopkins won for Best Actor. And he was obviously unprepared, because he got up there and he started sort of babbling, including the fact that his father, who, as he pointed out, never thought he would amount to anything. Too bad he wasn't still alive. He would have really enjoyed this. And then he thought about that for a minute. He says, you know, he died 10 years ago tonight. Well, being a numbers person, I'm thinking to myself, let's see, March 30th, 1991, 10 years ago tonight. That would have been March 30th, 1981. And then all of a sudden it dawned on me, wait a minute. That was the day that Ronald Reagan got shot, March 30th, 1981. And you know why he got shot? He got shot because John Hinckley was trying to impress Jodie Foster. So I get on the phone and I call up Dr. Hart and I said, Jodie Foster's going to win the Academy Award for Best Actress. He says, how do you figure that? And I told him, I said, well, Anthony Hopkins' father died 10 years ago. And 10 years ago, that's when Reagan was shot. Reagan got shot because of John Hinckley, and John Hinckley was trying to impress Jodie Foster. Well, sure enough, about 45 minutes or an hour later, Jodie Foster walked off with the Academy Award for Best Actress. Now, you can say, oh, well, that's just a coincidence.
Well, I find it amazing, but I can hear half of London screaming at me outside my window now as I record this, screaming, that's a coincidence. That's, right. You know, a nice story to tell.
It's too organized. Mm-hmm. And one of the interesting things about that is rarely, if ever, do you get ahead of a coincidence. That is, be able to put it all together ahead of time and figure out what it's about to say. Okay, you can look, most coincidences are situations that you look back on and say, well, that did this, and then that happened, and then this occurred, and the end product was thus. Okay, this was a situation where I was way ahead of the curve on that one. I put the pieces together 45 minutes before they actually fell together. Okay, that never happens. Okay, I defy anybody to have one of those where they put the pieces together and they tell you, well, because of all of that, here's what's going to happen. And then they're right. Okay, George and I have had those kinds of things happen now over the course of the almost 24 years that Merlin has existed a number of times.
And the thing that fascinates me most about Merlin, and I've said it to you a zillion times in the different conversations we've had, is that I am blown away that somebody's actually decided to sit down and create almost an algorithm that can make this thing provable and predictable, and you know, you can put it down on a piece of paper and look at it. It's not coincidences and strange happenings in your head.
Right, and when you go to one of the websites, I mean, we've got two primary websites. One is projectmerlin.com, and the other is Time Tracks without the C. It's TimeTrakS.org. If you go there and you take a look at, for instance, Tiger Woods. Now, Tiger Woods, we did the original run for Tiger Woods back in the late 90s when he first appeared on the scene. But the time track is 18 years long. So considering that if we started it, say, in 1997, okay, it would play out all the way to about 2015, just by adding the 18 years. And that includes the years in which all hell broke loose, where he was physically injured a number of times and was unable to play for a year, and the whole thing with his wife and the women and all the rest of it. Well, if you go to the Time Track library that we have at timetracks.org and you take a look at Tiger Woods' Time Track, this thing that was originally run back in the late 90s, and then you look at the years that start around 2008, 2009, and notice what the trend line does at that point. You'd have to be blind, deaf, and dumb not to notice it, because at that point on the trend line literally jumps off the page. It turns into this enormous mountain range that goes on from about 2008, 2009, all the way out to about 2015 or thereabouts.
But if I was Tiger Woods and I'd got hold of that time track when you did it, and I'd seen all this activity, and it's very impressive when you look at the chart, you see this great mass of activity looking like a blizzard in front of you. If I'd been him and I'd looked at that in the period that he had his difficulties, and we know what they were, what use would that have been to me? Well, practically, to say a lot of stuff is going to happen is no great help, is it?
If I were Tiger Woods, I would have erased all of those phone numbers from his cell phone. Okay,
but all he'd have known is a lot of stuff is going to happen in my life.
Speed dial. Okay, I mean, here is a kid who basically spent all of his early years playing golf. He really missed out on the boy-girl stuff, you know, in college and whatnot, because, well, everybody else was busy doing that. He was out at the course practice range hitting golf balls. Okay. He finally got around to all of that at an inconvenient moment, like after he got married, okay? And he did the kind of silly, stupid stuff that you and I might have done in our teens or early 20s. He was doing it late, and it caught up to him. Okay, now, the interesting thing is that before all of that happened, before the women trip really hit the fan, he had a series of injuries that were serious. I mean, he tore the ACL in his left knee, and he played at one point with a fracture in his leg. Okay, and I had an ACL tear in my left knee and I know what it's like. He was out of service, essentially, for an entire year.
But is there anything in the data that you had before all this stuff happened for him that would have indicated to him that that would be a problem?
Well, if you look at, again, if you look at what the timeline does or trend line does starting in 08-09, you'd have to consider that something of a fairly significant sort, not like what's been going on for him, because that's what these time tracks essentially say, when it moves from very little activity or fairly consistent activity to a mountain range like that that then goes on for several years.
And importantly, can you drill down into this material, Paul? This is the important bit. Can you drill down into that data?
Yeah, here's what I'm going to say.
All right.
If you see that coming, the one thing you can be sure of is what Fred Briggs from NBC News once said when he was looking at all of this. He said, well, you don't necessarily know whether it's going to be good or bad, but you sure know it ain't going to be dull. Okay.
And may you live in interesting times.
That's exactly right. You know that what's coming at that point is not going to be what's typical for your life. Now, what had been typical for him was winning several tournaments every year and finishing in the top 5 or 10 in the tournaments he didn't win. That became typical. In fact, it was so typical that he intimidated absolutely everybody. You know, I mean, there's this statistic that's true, I think, still to within one tournament, that if Tiger Woods is leading or tied for the lead on the third round of a tournament, he's going to win that tournament. Now, that's not true of anybody else that's ever played golf. Okay, certainly not the current crop. But even if you go back to the
Jack Nicklaus,
well, even before Nicklaus, you know, Bobby Jones and Byron Nelson and those kind of people, nobody ever did that. Okay, and in this recent period, there was all this speculation: you know, is Tiger ever going to catch Jack? And you know, is Tiger ever going to win those 18 or more majors? Well, he beat Jack at Jack's own tournament this year. Okay, that's where he caught up to Jack.
Now, presumably, Paul, he didn't know about his time track, okay?
No, he didn't.
All right, well, here's an interesting point for just to think about, and we've got to get this in here, because say somebody knows their time track and they've seen it, and Tiger Woods sees this great flurry of activity around that time and sees that at that particular point in the tournament, he always wins it. Is it useful to know that? Because then you start thinking about it. Then your brain starts to come into play and you might influence what happens.
Well, yes and no. I think that Tiger, being who he is, okay, for instance, this would only be exceedingly useful information. And by the way, we sell a light device that uses LEDs to heal things. It speeds up healing. It's used by the government. It's actually something that was developed in the UK for things like dementia and whatnot. These devices will speed up healing by 3 to 5 times normal if you apply the light to the damaged area, and there doesn't seem to be any downside to these units. Well, we started selling them about maybe 5 years ago because I tore the ACL in my left knee and I was trying to find something that would speed up the healing, and I tripped over these things. We tried every which way to get Tiger tuned into this because one of my colleagues, a fellow named Dr. Ross Lipton, is a pain specialist, and Ross had some serious surgery done in his own situation, and it turned out that the surgeons that worked on Ross were the same surgeons that worked on Tiger.
Okay, so you were quite close to him.
Well, we were able to get his home phone number and home address and whatnot, sent him all this stuff. Now the question is, did he look at it? And we don't know that. Okay. We know it was sent. And we know that it was sent to the proper address because the surgeons gave Ross the address. figuring that there's no way Tiger could figure out that it was his surgeons who betrayed him, basically.
How frustrating that there is, well, there is a way, I suppose, if you want, if you could engineer a meeting with Tiger Woods and ask him if he'd remember, but you're not going to know whether this played a part.
We've had a few of those. The Playmate of the Year for 1998 gave Hefner, Hugh Hefner, for his 80th birthday, a consult with us with a bunch of time tracks for the women who were in that show called The Girls Next Door.
Really?
Okay. That is Holly Madison and Bridget Marquand and this little blonde Kendra Wilkinson, I think her name is. Hefner had those. And we showed him that basically that whole thing with the girls is going to go by the wayside after about 3 years. Well, it did. Okay, he dumped the girls. Holly was heartbroken because she thought she was going to marry him, and he took up with this other woman, who then pulled out of the wedding at the last minute because he decided he was going to marry her. And we had seen all of that. In the stuff that we sent Hef.
So Hugh Hefner got the information. We don't know if he acted on it, but if he'd seen it, perhaps it would have done him some good. Maybe.
Well, it would have done him some good, because it would have said to him, look, the three girl situation, which, by the way, they tried to continue with new girls, and it didn't fly. Partly, I think, because the chemistry between those particular three girls was very, very good. It was. I don't know if you saw any of those, but they were hilarious. Okay, they were absolutely hilarious. Each one of them has gotten a career out of it. Kendra is running a reality series on I don't know if it's the E Channel or which one, the women's channel, the WE. Holly Madison has become the toast of Las Vegas. With a show that she's involved in, so I mean this has produced some long term benefit for the girls, and Hefner, he's an icon. You have to wonder at his age how he could possibly perform with these girls, but he seems to he's a big proponent of Viagra, so I suppose. It does work.
Well, jolly good phrase we have over here. Good for him is what we say in London.
It. You got it.
Good for him. If he can still do that now, well.
In terms of Merlin, there have been a number of occasions over the years where some prominent person got these things, and we don't know what the upshot of it was because we didn't get feedback. Doesn't mean they didn't look at it. You have to wonder in some of these situations whether they took some of that information to heart, and it affected decision making. One of the things that people don't seem to understand about these, and it's one of the problems that we regularly run into, is they say, well, you can't predict what's going to happen, so what's the use? And the fact of the matter is that there's no such thing as what's going to happen. What's going to happen is a confluence of a bunch of circumstances, many of which haven't all come together yet. So in other words, what's going to happen is a kind of construction. It's a mixture of circumstances that are at play and circumstances involving other people and the timetable of things and what you did 7 years ago and a whole bunch of stuff.
What forecasters like to call variables.
Yes.
All down to variables. Well, if it's all down to variables, then haven't you just talked yourself out of business?
No, because one of those variables is time. And it's a variable that we don't pay any attention to. When you're making a decision about something important, you ask friends, you ask experts, you look things up, you go online, you query things and whatnot. But how many people bother to consider whether it's an appropriate moment to be doing that? It's one of the problems we run into because people don't want to have to consider that. You know, they already have to consider too damn many things when they're making up their mind. Many, many more things than our parents and grandparents ever had to take into account. But, you know, after you finish with all of those known things that you take into account before making a decision, do you also want to have to take into account, is it an appropriate moment? In other words, if I do this right now or at the time I want to do it, is it going to play? Is it going to fly? Is it going to happen? Okay. Are the other circumstances going to come together at that point to make something happen? I'll give you an example. And I was going to suggest, I know you don't normally do this, but when you post this podcast, it might be fun to post some of the time tracks that we're talking about, like, for instance, Tiger Woods and some of the ones we're going to talk about, so that people can download the time track and actually see what we were talking about. But one of the sets that I sent you in that context that's very interesting is three time tracks having to do with Facebook. Okay. Zuckerberg's, mm-hmm. excuse me. Okay. The date that Facebook was founded, which was in February of 2004, Zuckerberg's birthday is May 14th, I think, 1984. And the founding date was February 4th, 2004. And then the IPO, the initial public offering.
Yeah, the share sell-off, yeah.
The stock offering, okay, which was May 17th, 2012. May 17th, by the way, just coincidentally, happens to be the founding date of the New York Stock Exchange in 1792. So the Zuckerberg IPO, the Facebook IPO, happened on the anniversary date of the founding of the New York Stock Exchange. Well, it wasn't a New York Stock Exchange stock. It was a NASDAQ stock. But you'll notice if you take a look at Zuckerberg's and the founding date and the IPO date, that if you look at 2012, from the end of 2011 to 2013, early 2014, there isn't much going on. Okay, in other words, there is a little bit of very intermittent activity on each one of those time tracks in the period of time during which this IPO happened, but not enough oomph to take that anywhere. So what happened? It opened at 38. It went to 42. It's now around 20. So anybody who bought this thing at the opening $38 or worse, when it got up to 42, has now lost half their money. Because
to be fair, a lot of people were predicting that beforehand. You know, they said this business has peaked and people are, there's, you know, evidence. I use Facebook, I love it, but then I was a late developer with it. A lot of people I know are abandoning Facebook. That trend was starting to happen already.
You know what, Howard? His birthday run from 1984 and the Internet founding date in 2004 is the date those time tracks were covering. So whatever they were saying recently doesn't matter because those are not a snapshot of recently. They're an extension of 1984 and 2004 forward. Okay. If we had run those at any date in the past or future, that's what they would have looked like.
So would your advice, based on the time tracks, have been to Mark Zuckerberg to sell up and go and buy a Caribbean island?
Find another date, is what I would have said.
And do you truly believe that if you'd found a more auspicious date, as shown by the time tracks, it would have worked out differently? Is that what we're saying here?
That's the theory. Now, here's what's interesting about that. One of the offerings of our technology, one of the things we do with clients, is for a very reasonable price, if you give us the date you bought a piece of property, the the date you put money down on it, the closing date, the official legal closing date, and the birthday of people involved in the transaction who own a piece of this. So if it's just you, it's your birthday. If it's you and your husband or your boyfriend or your mother or father or something like that, it's you and their birthdays. But we're talking about your birthday and theirs, and then the date of the closing and the date you put money down on that property. If we run those time tracks, we can first of all see if this is a period of time that you're liable to be able to unload that property or not. And also, if you say, well, it may not be a propitious moment for me to unload it, but I have to unload it because I need the money. We will find you a date in the near future, over the next, say, 6 to 12 months, when if you put that property on the market on that date in the multiple listing book and get it on the internet and whatnot, on that date that we gave you to list it, we can increase your chances of actually selling that property maybe 100-fold.
I can hear people screaming in America, yeah, is he going to give me a guarantee on that?
You know what? Here's the guarantee. We will do up that work for nothing in return for a percentage of the closing when it sells, if it sells within the time period we're recommending.
That's a great commercial. Are you really offering that as a proposition?
Yes.
That's a hell of a commercial.
Yes. We will do the run and tell you what the chances are of it selling and find you a date in the future to sell. And if it sells in that time frame, you have to fork over probably, we haven't made up our minds yet on how much, a half a point or a full point in the closing. Now,
Okay, I've got to say this before we go 1 millimeter further. If you're interested in that offer, don't contact me. Contact Paul and George. It'll be on the website, theunexplained.tv. How to do that, please don't contact me.
We have a toll-free number you can call. Okay. Now, the thing is, it's a win-win situation. If we're wrong, you don't owe us anything. Okay. If we're right, you owe us a piece of the action. Now,
yeah, but if you're wrong, then I could lose. I could still be a loser, couldn't I?
No, if we're wrong, the worst you could lose is the cost of listing it, which means you sign a contract with a realtor, and the minimal costs of putting the listing out on the market.
As long as you don't go ahead with it, right?
We're not talking about a lot of money there. Okay, at the most, we're talking about a few tens or maybe hundreds of dollars only. Okay, to get the thing, I don't know what their cost. It depends on who you're dealing with, how much they're charging you, and in some cases, they're not charging you at all to list it. They're in it for the percentage, which is, in the case of a realtor, as much as about 7% of the selling price is what you're going to have to give them, and they absorb all the rest of those costs, including the listing in the MLS and whatnot. That's their cost of doing business.
All right. Well, I'm a simple soul. I'm impressed by the fact that you and George have now got to the point where you can try a stunt like that. That's pretty good. Hey, we have to get into some of these specific time tracks, only because of the time factor on here.
I have one besides the Facebook that I want to mention.
All right, do it.
David Cameron.
Oh, well, isn't that weird? I'm holding it in my hand right now.
Oh, my God, a coincidence.
Absolutely. If you could do a time track on that. I'm looking at David Cameron's time track here. But it's telling me that there's a lot happening for him in the next few years, which who would predict that?
And you know what? The previous spike was in late 2010, early 2011. Isn't that when he got the job?
That is when he got the job. Now, I've got to say, David, for those who don't know, and there are people who don't, David Cameron is the somewhat embattled at the moment British Prime Minister. All kinds of stuff kicking off for him at the moment. The banking sector here, Paul, is in a very bad state. I don't know if you've been following
now,
it in recent days.
He was going to be adversely affected.
Yeah.
By the international economy in the next couple of years, wouldn't he be up for replacement?
Would have thought so.
Okay. And doesn't that time track go nuts beginning in early 2013?
It does. And let me tell you that the bookies over here are taking bets that he will be gone by November. this year, thereabouts. So that, you know, well, that's just a sidelight.
Now, here I'm running David Cameron's run from his birthday in October. What, October? What is it up there in the upper left-hand corner? I don't have it in front of me.
Genesis 10/09, 1966. So 10th of September, September 10.
Oh, September, not October. Okay.
September 10.
September. All right. So in other words, you're looking at a printout of the current 18 years in the life of David Cameron that we could have run any day after he was born and get this measure of activity in the next couple of years. In other words, it's not relative to the bookies or what we know historically in terms of what's going on economically and so on. It is based on his starting moment. Okay, this is the 18 years, the extension off that birth date. That's all it is. This would have printed out with this information no matter when you ran it.
All right, well, this chart is telling me, as you just said, very good time just after the election in this country, which was 2010. 2011 into 2012, well, plenty of activity there, but it all goes absolutely ballistic. 2013, 2014, 2015, and then starts to tail off, but still busy, 2016, 2017, 2018.
That's right, right. Now, if you were to compare that to the time track for the United States of America born on the 4th of July in 1776, which I sent you, and look at what goes on that time track in the comparable period of time, that is beginning in 2013, okay, and if what we're looking at there is not wonderful, great stuff, because knowing what's going on politically in the U.S. and what's going on with Obama and what's going on economically and so on and so forth, okay, we could hope for nirvana in the U.S. over the next, say, 5 years, but the chances of nirvana being what happens, I would put in about the 10th percentile. Okay, in the 90 percentile, it's more and worse of what's been going on, both economically and politically and so on.
Plenty of people who know stuff more than I know, predicting a global banking catastrophe by the end of this year, 2012, which, of course, David Cameron would have to deal with, and so would the USA,
so would Obama.
Of course.
Yeah. Okay, right. And one other run, which I came up with sort of as an incidental, I said, gee, you know, there's enough people in this country who absolutely cannot stand the idea that this Afro-American guy got to be in the White House. They just, I mean, you can call it what you want, but it's racism of the very first order, okay? I mean, you've even got Republicans in the Senate and House saying things like their entire, you know, career is based on the idea at this point of getting this guy out of office. Okay, there's enough people out there who are furious that he got in the first place. Imagine if he gets back. Okay, the number of people who are going to be out gunning for this guy is going to increase by probably a factor of three times. And when I say gunning for him, I mean that quite literally. Okay, that if the Secret Service has had problems with people over the last 4 years, they're going to have a bigger problem over the next four. And one of the things that might reflect that, because I went looking for something that might tell me if that was a realistic possibility, is the date Martin Luther King got assassinated. So I ran it, and you have it. Okay, it's the April 4th, 1968 time track. Okay, compare that time track to the U.S. run and to David Cameron's. Okay, and notice what it does. The years from 2013 on go nuts. Okay, now, why would that be? Martin Luther King died, you know, 40 years ago. Okay, better than 40 years ago. There's nothing, you know, nothing going on in Martin Luther King's life. Oh, wait a minute. His memorial just opened, and who opened it but Barack Obama a few months ago. okay, in the later spring. So the Martin Luther King Memorial, the big Martin Luther King Memorial, just opened right on schedule. Okay, and if something were going to happen to Obama in the second term, wouldn't it be likely that it might show up on Martin Luther King's assassination run, because it would be more of the same. It would be an extension of an earlier storyline. Okay.
But that is a hell of a big stretch to say something like that, though, isn't it?
You'd think so. You'd think so.
Well, it is, isn't it?
No, it really isn't, because what we did when we ran the World Trade Center, we ran the World Trade Center time track for the bombing in 1993 and found 9/11. And all it was an extension of the earlier episode. And George and I, when 9/11 happened, we kind of looked at each other, scratched our heads, and said, did it occur to you that these guys would come back and finish the job? Okay. And the fact of the matter was, it hadn't occurred to us. Even though we ran the World Trade Center bombing in 93 to see if there were any hiccups coming. Well, there was. At the end of 2001, beginning of 2002, there was a significant hiccup. But the bigger hiccup was on the run for Pearl Harbor, okay, which was the last time we had a sneak attack with planes. And as a matter of fact, almost the same number of people died in Pearl as died in the World Trade Center episode.
So when you extrapolated that forward from the 1940s...
We found 9/11.
Okay. Now, the problem with that, though, is that you find that, and it's good to look back at it in retrospect and say, well, look, we were there. But at the time, if you'd had that data projecting forward from Pearl Harbor and seeing in future some event involving the World Trade Center that tied in with the other stuff, with the bombing in the first place.
Right.
Practically, one, who could you have told?
Well, wait a minute.
All right, okay.
Let me tell you the story. Hmm? In April of 1995, we got a phone call from a high-level member of the Joint Chiefs of Staff in the Pentagon.
Really?
They had seen us on Larry King and wanted to know what we were up to. So they asked us, this is in April of 1995, okay, to prepare a white paper on what we were doing. We gave them that white paper in July of 95. And in that white paper, we included things like Pearl Harbor and the original bombing of the World Trade Center. And we used the Timothy McVeigh blowing up of the Mora building in Oklahoma City. Because what the Pentagon was actually interested in was our projections on domestic terrorism. So the only three serious episodes of domestic terrorism that we had to play with was Pearl Harbor and the 1993 bombing of the World Trade Center and the Mora building explosion, which actually happened right after the Pentagon called us. So what made us include that and actually focused us on domestic terrorism was the fact that they called us about 2 weeks or 3 weeks after the Oklahoma City bombing.
So in other words, you warned them. They were warned and you did the warning.
Howard, we provided them with 40 copies of this. And on 9/11, when the plane hit the Pentagon, it hit the building in which 40 copies of our report were in various file cabinets.
Right.
So you're asking us, what if we told somebody? We did. Okay. We told the exact people. In fact, and George said to me because I got all excited when the Pentagon called. I said, oh, wow, we finally made it. You know, we're finally being taken seriously. He said, oh, no, don't get your hopes up. I said, why is that? He said, well, you don't know how the Pentagon works. I said, so tell me. He said, well, first of all, these guys that work there get cycled in and out of their jobs about every 18 months. So he said, those of us who are Pentagon contractors, who are dealing with them all the time, probably spend 75% of our time updating the new guy on what the old guy already knew. Okay. He said, this thing will fall into the great black hole at the Pentagon, never to be heard from again. I said, no. He said, yes. He said, so we can go ahead and submit it and give it to them, but they will, I can guarantee that if something happens, they will never have paid attention to it. Well, that was about, let's see, 6 years before it actually happened. And he was absolutely right. It was on file in the building. Okay, when 9/11 happened, this report, and in the report are time tracks that clearly showed that at the end of 2001, beginning of 2002, there was a likelihood of a very high-level episode.
And your contacts in the security services, the ones who had dealings with you, did you phone them up afterwards and say, look, we did warn you about this?
They weren't there anymore. The people we submitted it to in incidentally, between the time we were asked to submit this and the time we actually submitted it, the guy who had called us had been moved on. So we actually had to explain this to the new guy, okay, who was now sitting in the job of the guy who had called us on behalf, and when he called us, by the way, he said he was calling us on behalf of his flag officers. Well, George worked for a think tank, and he called the Washington office of the think tank and said, who are flag officers? And he was told that flag officers were two-star generals and above. So we prepared a white paper for two-star generals and above in 1995 that was in the files of the World Trade Center when they were hit.
So those people knew. Those people were aware.
That is an absolutely true story. If you ask George, he'll tell you the same thing.
And what do you believe, then, is the reason that more action... I know you've told me that everybody moved on at one level, but...
That's one of the problems. The other problem was... that they had trouble determining, you know, what to look for. Well, we don't predict what to look for. We just predict when to look for it.
And their business, let's face it, that's what they're paid to do. That's what they're elected or paid to do, or appointed, whatever, is to join the, you know, to cross the T's and dot the I's. That's not your job.
Right, here's a comparable example. Mm-hmm. On August 6th, I believe it's August 6th, you look this up. Bush, George W., was down at the ranch. And he got his morning briefing. And in the morning briefing of August 6th, 2001, he was told that Al-Qaeda was planning on flying planes at the buildings. That was 6 weeks before they flew the planes into the buildings. You know why they didn't pay attention to it?
Mm-hmm.
Because they couldn't figure out how the guys flying the planes would get off the planes before the plane hit the building.
Right.
And they said, well, they're not going to do that because they'd have to stay on the plane.
That's true. I think our thought, most of us at that time, and I'll tell you why I believe this, most people in positions of power, wherever they are, didn't allow for the fact that somebody would actually want to commit spectacular suicide in that way. I remember interviewing Ken Livingstone, who was at the time the mayor of London, and I asked him about the possibility of a terrorist attack on the London subway system, the Tube.
Right.
And he said to me, and Ken Livingstone speaks a bit like that, I won't try and do my impression of him, but he's got a very distinctive voice, and we were on the air on Capital Radio in London, and he said, terrorists would never attack the underground system in London because it's so slow they'd never be able to get away.
Right.
True story.
Well, that's same story. That's why the whole idea of paying attention to planes was not taken seriously, because they could not figure out how they'd get off the plane. And as a result, they dismissed it and said, well, that's not going to happen. They'd have to stay on the plane.
So at the end of the day, all this fantastic data can be disarmed and disabled by the human factor. Misinterpretation.
Absolutely. And when you're dealing with something as esoteric as what George and I do, okay, we have turned we have turned an esoteric phenomenon into as practical a tool as I think it's possible to do, considering what we're working with. Okay, the idea that time has patterns to it, and if you can freeze the original moment where the idea started or where the company started or whatever it is, you can figure out when in future years, and not just in future years, but in portions of years, there's going to be a huge fork in the road. And while you can't figure out whether that fork in the road is going to be good or bad, if you know where to look for it, you can plan around that. You can either, you know, what I tell people is, like I said, you can either capitalize on it or know when to duck. Okay.
So if this was an edition of Mission Impossible from 1969, and you got the little tape that had been left for you in the phone box before it self-destructed, it would probably say, good morning, Mr. Guercio. Your task now is to get the message out to as many people as possible so that thinking this way, because this involves a change of mindset,
it
becomes more acceptable. If it had been more acceptable, you're saying, before 9/11, 9/11 mightn't have happened.
That's right. And if they'd paid attention to the report that Bush got on August 6th about the flight, I mean, this was clear. They're planning to fly planes into buildings. Okay. Now, how much clearer could it possibly have been than that? Okay. But they didn't pay any attention to it because they thought it through and said, well, that's not going to work because they have to get off the planes. And how are they going to get off the planes? So it was, and the thing we gave them only indicated where in time there was going to be a significant uptick in domestic terrorism activity. We didn't say it was going to be at the Pentagon or at the World Trade Center, even though we used the World Trade Center bombing as our time model. It should have occurred to us and didn't, that, oh my God, they might come back and try that again.
All right, we've all been asking in the intervening years, speaking as one who covered 9/11 from Ground Zero itself, in fact, was there a couple of times. The question that we've all been asking is there a possibility something like this could happen again? Or are we now savvy enough, our security services, where we can make sure we make the right arrests, get the right intelligence, and stop those things happening before they might? Well, in other words, are we going to have a repeat?
Right. Here's what's interesting. One of the time tracks I think I sent you is the Osama bin Laden time track.
Got it here.
Okay. Mm-hmm. Okay. Now, notice that on the top line, the years beginning in, what is it?
95. You go from 95 to 2012.
Okay. So from 95 to 2000, which is the top line, it's practically devoid of activity. Okay, there's no significant activity. There's little, you know, occasional little hiccups, but really nothing much going on. So you'd ignore the top line. The second line, which is the years from 2001 on through 2007, I think, doesn't start to show any pronounced activity until around the end of 2001, beginning of 2002. In fact, it places what we now know as the World Trade Center bombing in very early 2002, not at the end of 2001. Merlin is only accurate to within 3 to 6 months of real time anyway.
All right, well, the spike in the data here is time shifted forward, isn't it? It's about 6 months by the looks of this chart
right
here.
That's right. That's right. But it's clear that on the second line, the trend line starts to take off. It starts to get very interesting around the end of 2001, beginning of 2002. Notice on the bottom line in 2011, it basically runs out of gas. Mm. And that's when they got him.
Well, I'm looking at the chart. Right. There is no disputing
right
that. That's what happens.
Okay. Now, I know I didn't send you the 9/11 run. I think you had it for the last time we did this, but I don't know that. I'm pretty sure I didn't send it to you again.
No, you didn't.
But if I had, what you'd see is that the trend line for Osama bin Laden and the trend line for 9/11 are virtually identical. The top line shows virtually no activity. The middle line shows the beginning of some real significant activity. And around 2010, 2011, it stops. It just drops out. Okay. So there's good reason to believe, although we didn't run it past 2012 or 2013, I can't remember which, that we've reached the end of the cycle of the big stuff going on. If there was going to be any more big stuff, it's probably already happened. And we've gotten much better with these drone strikes and all the rest of the stuff we're doing of knocking these people out. So the chances of us running into another 9/11 or in London, another tube bombing, okay, I would put way down in the 10 percentile or less.
Well, Paul, that's going to give a lot of people a lot of comfort as we come up to the Olympics here in London.
I would be very surprised if there was. Now, does that mean there'd be no episode? I don't think you could ever say that. We live in a world where terrorist activity is fairly commonplace. But, you know, there was terrorist activity at the Atlanta Olympics back a number of years ago. And I think maybe, what, two or three people died or something? Maybe something like that. Nothing significant. Okay. And really, since London and Spain, okay, there hasn't been anything of any significance going on other than the typical run-of-the-mill, you know, suicide bombers in Jerusalem and the West Bank and, you know, et cetera, that kind of thing. Okay. There really hasn't been any.
So the next few years, from just tying together some threads from what we've been talking about then, it's not going to be terrorism we're looking at, but there's going to be political turmoil, and that is reflected in the chart of David Cameron, our Prime Minister, of Obama, of the United States. It all comes together, 2013, 2014, 2015, big times ahead.
Right. My suspicion is, I think they're a little early on their judgment call of the economies, you know, blowing out.
Demise.
You know, so I think if we're going to see that, we're going to see it sometime next year, not late this year, but that's close enough that it could be right. And as I said earlier, when you see a run like the U.S. run over the next 3 to 5 years, or 5 to 7, actually, even, it would be nice to think that things are going to get spectacularly better, but there's absolutely no indication that that's the case. And short of some angel arriving on station or something to keep it all intact, I would say that the chances of it running off the rails is way much likelier than anything else. And if Obama gets reelected, and that's what we think is likely, okay, we've looked at the runs for everybody else. I mean, it's been a sideshow here. I'm sure that the Europeans have been laughing their butt off over what's been going on here with these crazy people who are running. I mean, people who don't know that, you know, Lexington and Concord was in Massachusetts, not New Hampshire, and the one who thinks she can see the Soviet Union from her kitchen window. I thought it's been so nutty. It's been so nutty that I can't imagine that we're anything but a laughing stock. But anyway, and also some of this other stuff of trying to go back to before contraceptives were allowed. I mean, it's so out of, you know, over the top that it's almost not worth talking about. With that kind of thing going on, the chances of the administration prevailing, I would say, is got to be above 60%, maybe as much as 70%. But also that we're not out of the woods on a lot of this yet, that the, you know, stuff hitting the fan from the financial collapses and whatnot that have gone on over the past several years, is likely, and we're going to see more of that because there's, you know, it's proliferated. I mean, it's not just what's going on here. It's what's going on in Europe, and we're so interconnected from a banking standpoint.
Oh yeah, you sneeze over there, and you know the flu goes around the world. Have you run time tracks for the major financial institutions? Presumably, you have.
You know what? It's very hard to get usable dates for and about the financial institutions because a lot of these things have gone through iterations. I mean, I was talking to somebody the other day, and I had the very first credit card that First National City Bank issued back in the 60s, early 70s. Called the Everything Card. The Everything Card eventually, I believe, became Visa. And First National Citibank is Citibank. It's New York. It was originally called First National Citibank of New York. Now it's just called Citi, C-I-T-I. Okay. And they've gone through so many iterations in terms of ownership and what they call themselves and so on, that it's very, very hard to get back to a starting date. Okay. And I'm not entirely sure that some of these entities aren't becoming very protective of dates like that because of people like us.
Hmm.
Okay. I mean, I had a client who was a radio host in Boston for years and years. I was a regular on his show four times a year. George heard me on that show originally. That's how we got together. And when George joined the scene, the host got very protective of information and stuff. Well, it turned out the reason he was because he figured that as good as I was, George could only make the thing better and more accurate. And he knew he had HIV and nobody else knew, and he didn't want anybody figuring out that he had AIDS, which he then later died of.
Right. So he was obviously, well, one can see why he was concerned.
Absolutely. And I can understand how getting date sensitive information has become as difficult as it is. I've had a hell of a time tracking down. I mean, I've had a hard time tracking down accurate birth information for a Mick Jagger. Okay, I never did get an accurate birth date for Muammar Gaddafi. Never got one. My best guess was that it was in or around May of 1942, but I never got the actual date.
But on the data that you had, did you predict his fate?
Yes, but only because we had dates of uprisings,
right,
things starting, and when he got bombed back.
So other significant stuff.
Yes, other significant stuff. And the same thing is true with the batch of stuff I sent you on Mubarak. You know, we have Mubarak's birthday, and we have when he took over in Egypt, and when the uprising started in the winter spring last year, and so on. And we, using that information, we were able to extract the fact that Mubarak was a goner, in the same way we figured that Gaddafi was a goner, and probably Bashir in Syria is probably also, with a little luck, by the end of the year. But that one's become a lot bloodier. In fact, one of the things that's really interesting about all of this is that coming into the period of late 2010, 2011, it occurred to me that we were 20, 21, 22 years down the road from the Soviet Union going belly up.
Uh-huh.
And since 21, 22 years is an extrapolation of those cycles, the ones I said started with 9 months and then is 7.25 years, and then 21, 22 years, and 42 and 84, we were 21, 22 years down the road from the Soviet Union going belly up. And I tried to figure out what where that where the next big hiccup like that was going to be, and concluded it was the Middle East. And so we ran the founding dates of Egypt and the founding dates for Iran and so on. And sure enough, okay, the what we now know to be the Arab Spring, what they're calling the Arab Spring, is happened right on schedule, right the right number of years later after the Soviet Union went belly up. And the Soviet Union, or what we now call just called Russia, has taken a few backward steps to where they were 22 years ago.
And that's true.
With Putin and so on. Okay.
With Mr.
So
Putin.
Isn't that interesting? Right on schedule.
All right. Now, listen, we're running rapidly out of time because you and I can talk. I said this last time. We probably could talk all day, but time is limited. So we've only got a few minutes. I want to get to the Mayan calendar and the end times. Now, the time track that you sent me, I'm holding it here, for the Mayan calendar and the supposed end of days shows no activity, really, from the end of this year. Does that mean
actually,
that the Mayan calendar...
Actually, even before the end of this year.
Yeah, even before the end of this year. Does that mean the world's coming to an end or we can breathe a sigh of relief? I'm not sure how to interpret this. What does it mean?
Here's what we thought. When we first ran those, we ran them back in the 90s, early 90s. And at that point, I hadn't heard about the end of the Mayan calendar. Okay, I didn't know there was an end of the Mayan calendar then. But what we noticed was that in the years 07, 08, 09, 010, so on, there was looked to be some kind of event occurring that two out of every three people on the planet was going to be affected by. And we started to suppose, you know, pole shift and incoming asteroid and, you know, all the first serious, intrusion of a UFO or you know, extraterrestrials. It never occurred to George and I that it was going to be almost the next Great Depression, in which approximately two out of every three people have been affected by this. So instead of it being a swine flu virus or some other pandemic or whatever it is, it was financial. Okay. And if you look at that end times run, where does it really start to ratchet up? Around 07 and 08, where the financial stuff really hit the fan. Not in 2012, 2013, where the end of the calendar is, but rather we're in the middle of the end time. We've been in the end times for the last four or five years.
But the end times not meaning the end of the planet as we know
exactly.
It's just meaning the end of the way that we do things now. That,
exactly. And we may end up, as a result of all of this, hopefully with some rules in place, so that it doesn't happen anymore.
Well, it's a great big banking inquiry going to be happening in the UK. That's what David Cameron
and
wants.
Everywhere else.
So we'll see.
And everywhere else here as well. And the thing is, if you extrapolate the fallout of all of this, it's probably true that the next generation will inherit a world that's much less financially stable and affluent than the one we inherited. Okay, in other words, our children, and it's already happening. I mean, these kids are coming out of college, and 19% of them are actually getting jobs, and everybody else is moving back in with their parents. Okay, that never happened before. Never. No, well, I would say never. Probably happened, you know, we go back a couple hundred years, people, you know, moved away and then moved back in with parents or something to take care of them or be taken care of something, but not for the reasons we're now seeing.
So does this tie into your sort of predictions of this turbulent time, 2013, 14, 15 onwards?
Exactly. And the interesting thing is that the time track for the end times doesn't reflect that at all. It just says look at this period 07, 08, 09, 010, 011, 012 as being the
well, it was the ski slope that built up to it, really.
That's right.
Yeah.
That's exactly it. And the fallout from this is showing up on the USA chart. It's showing up on David Cameron's. It's showing, I'm sure if I ran Sarkozy, it would show up, and, you know, et cetera, et cetera. Bertolucci, didn't he lose his job this year? Earlier in the year, he'd been there for, he'd been running things for, had to have been running them for 8 or 10 years, if not longer than that. I don't know what the actual time frame was, but he's out. Sarkozy's out. The Cameron run looks like it's going to get really interesting starting at the end of this year, beginning of next year, if not a little sooner. Okay, because again, there's an overlap here. Remember what I said, Merlin only guarantees to be accurate within 3 to 6 months.
That time lag there. Yeah.
That's right, of real time. Although it tends to be more accurate than that in actual practice. We don't stick our necks out and say that, though. But because, I mean, the 9/11 thing shows up about 6 months later, not exactly what it actually should have happened. But again, the years upcoming look like fallout from what's been going on the last 5 years. So, yes, the last 5 years was a kind of end times, all right, but not the kind of end times that all these other people had in mind. I personally think that December 21st, 2012, and thereabouts, is going to turn out to be about as exciting as Y2K was.
I.e., as far as we know, not very. Hey, listen, you've got 60 seconds. You're involved in a project, I know, because you've told me, that could get this popularized, as we've talked about, among ordinary people and really spread the fire. So tell me very quickly about that.
Well, as I said to you earlier, George has been working the last 6 months on a 4G application for Merlin to be called Time Tracks. And what will happen is if you have a smartphone or a one of these, you know, zone, what do they call them? The
iPad.
The other things. I can't think of what the word is.
iPhone.
No, it sounds like the LCU. Yeah, It's a G phone technology. In any case, you'll be able to punch in a date and get a time track right on the phone in real time, right then and there. And
for yourself,
if you want to know, is this a good moment to buy this car or date this woman or, you know, or whatever it is, take this plane flight. Okay. You'll get an instant readout of what that time track looks like. And once you understand even just a little bit about how to read these, and while they sound difficult, they are not. They are very easy to read. They're very clear once you have had a look at a few of them.
Hey, Paul, could become the new Ouija board.
Well, you know, nothing would make us happier than to have everybody running around with one of these things and plugging it in. Also, and I didn't mention this to you, what is on the planning board is a library of time tracks starting in 1700 and running to 2200, where you can go at your leisure, and for a very small subscription, you can run any date you want and see what it looks like. So if you're looking for a date to start something, you can run dates to see what that looks like. If you want to see what your father's time track looked like, or the business that you started 40 years ago,
you can do all that stuff. This is where it starts to get interesting. Paul, listen, this is already going to be the longest edition of this show online that I've ever done. But I kind of felt that was going to happen anyway, really, because it usually does.
Well, that's why I asked you the other day, how long do you want this to run?
Yeah, well, that's okay. Well, you know,
45 minutes.
Within reason, we're flexible. That's all right. We're British and flexible. So people want to know about this. Where do they go? Tell me the website. Give me the details.
You can get to Merlin if you're online by simply going to Project Merlin. That's Merlin the Wizard, Project Merlin, no spaces, .com. ProjectMerlin.com. will get you to the basic website. You want to look at these time tracks? Go to Time Tracks without a K, TimeTracks, no C, but with a K, .org, timetracks.org. We're on Facebook. The Merlin Project Research Group is out of reach, or you can go find me. I'm a little hard to spell, but it's Guercio, G-U-E-R-C-I-O, Paul Guercio. And we have a toll-free number you can call from the States. And if you're international, you can dial your international code. And then 866-298-7688. I'll give it to you again. 866-298-7688. And if you're interested in any of those things we talked about earlier, the light device, the date to pick to put a house or property on the market.
This is a big commercial.
Get in touch with us.
Nobody sells it better. Oh, God. Paul Guercio, thank you very, very much.
It's been great fun talking to you again, Howard. We have such a good time when we do this. Let's do it sooner than a year and a half.
Absolutely. Well, we've got to do it certainly sometime between 2013 and 2015, I think.
And shorter.
May you live in interesting times, Paul Guercio. Thank you very much.
You're welcome.
Paul Guercio, old friend of the unexplained there from the Merlin Project, and you'll find a link to him and their work on my website, www.theunexplained.tv, devised and designed by Adam Cornwell at Creative Hotspot in Liverpool, the guy who's designed that website and gets this show out to you wherever you are. Thank you so much for your support. Keep the email coming in, please, and keep your donations coming as well, vital for the show. Thank you so much. Please take care, and I will see you very soon again on another edition of The Unexplained.